can't get anywhere, especially if you're a new artist, because the market's so diluted. And I think that's just bringing it back to AI. That's what we're seeing, right? A lot of copycats that are diluting the market. But there will always be a place for talent and realness and raw, real human emotion, which is the one thing that AI cannot provide yet.
Hello, I'm Bruce Berman, the host of Understanding IP Matters, a podcast series that looks at how IP rights affect creators and impact businesses. Understanding IP Matters episodes are available wherever podcasts are streamed and on understandingip.org. Content providing artificial intelligence-based platforms became available to the public late last year. Best regarded as a time-saving tool, the accuracy and fairness of bots like Microsoft-owned ChatGPT and Google's Bard are currently being debated. Some AI responses are remarkably intelligent and nuanced, but when they are inaccurate or based on bad or stolen content, they still sound authoritative. The promise is there, but so is the potential for danger. Elon Musk, among others, is calling for a six-month moratorium on development. To better understand what generative AI means to creators, businesses, and society, we have with us today two people on the front lines of law and entertainment. Keith Kupperschmidt heads the Copyright Alliance in Washington, a 2-million-member nonprofit organization comprised of creators like writers, photographers, and musicians, and organizations of all sizes. He oversees strategy and government affairs, and his extensive work on Capitol Hill has contributed to improving copyright law. Keith has raised the profile of copyright within the creator community and has worked to add rights and protections for creators across the country through education and advocacy. Lana Love is a classically trained singer-songwriter, pianist, dancer, and actress-turned-pop artist. Her successful appearance on NBC's The Voice, where she was teamed with John Legend, has helped her to generate 40,000 Instagram followers. Lana is recognized for her genre-bending mix of opera, musical theater, jazz, pop, and rock. She writes, records, and performs her own songs and those of others. Good morning, Lana and Keith. It's seldom we have both a creator, performer, and a policy strategist on the podcast together. So this will be a unique experience for our listeners. Lana, I think you're in New York.
I am. Good morning from the East Coast.
Okay, great. And Keith, you're in D.C. today?
I am. I am in Washington, D.C. in our offices here.
Great. Okay. Well, Keith, let's start with you. What has been the copyright community's take on generative AI? Is it a tool for creators or a harbinger of weaker rights and loss of income? What's your take?
Can I say yes? In other words, can I say both?
Sure.
Because I think that's true. I mean, we have a lot of creators and organizations in the creative community that are using AI. Matter of fact, we've got many who have been using AI for quite some time now. So I think it's a real opportunity. And will bring new types of creativity to the forefront. And so from that, I think it's a good thing. It's a good opportunity. But like with any new technology that brings along new opportunities, it also brings along some challenges. And there's a lot of challenges here. The biggest one is simply that the AI developers are not getting permission or compensating copyright owners when their AI tools ingest copyrighted works in order to train those tools. And that's the biggest issue. And so that might be, you know, as you said, sort of a harbinger of bad things to come, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Lana, you're a songwriter, a recording artist, a performer. Has generative AI like ChatGPT and the others, the other one, major one, has it had an impact on your work yet, or, you know, do you think it will?
It absolutely has. And I think Keith brought up a really great point. You know, it's enhancing so many artists at the moment, including myself. I use it every single day for multiple different things. Mm-hmm. Mostly emails and workflow and just streamlining my creative process. I don't think there's a such thing as writer's block anymore. So that's huge. You know, what took Hemingway 2 years to write, AI could generate in 2 seconds.
Give us an example of how you might use it as a tool to your work, say writing a song.
Sure. Yeah. And just saying, not saying that if it's good or bad, right? But at least it's a starting point. So for example, I could say, write me a song in style of Drake, right? That's the go-to of what seems to be everyone these days. And then I could just pull words from that. But the creator still has to pick what to use or not, right? So that's really working in tandem with AI, as opposed to making it a creator. It is a tool. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important for artists, or else we're just making more of the same, and the world doesn't need that.
But Keith, when you say, for example, write a song or write lyrics for me in the style of Taylor Swift or some other, or Adele or someone, doesn't that by nature, are you infringing already on their content by asking for that?
Actually, you're not. I mean, this is a great question, because there's this misunderstanding that maybe copyright protects, quote unquote, in the style of, and it doesn't, right?
Okay.
But when you ask some type of AI machine to produce something in the style of, whether it's a literary work or music or imagery or something, then what's going to happen is it's going to look at its data sets and pull from its data sets that are in the style of that person. And all of a sudden, you limit what that data set is, and therefore you increase the chance that there is potentially an infringement. But simply asking for something in the style of is in and of itself not an infringement, but it really is going to depend. And that's why we've been pushing AI developers and their AI systems to incorporate safeguards, so it limits the opportunity or the chance for an infringement when somebody does something like that, like ask for something in the style of.
Copyright Alliance represents creators of all types, recording artists, photographers. Which groups have been most vocal about their opposition or concern about AI?
I wouldn't use the word opposition. I would use concern, right? Because what I know we at the Copyright Alliance and our members are all supportive of AI, but they're supportive of responsible, ethical, respectful use of AI. And there's a difference, because we don't think that's going on necessarily right now. And so you ask, which of my members are concerned about AI? I can tell you every single one of them. It's somewhat rare at the Copyright Alliance for all our members to be focused on the same issues and have the same concerns. And that's exactly what's going on here. So frankly, that makes my job a little bit easy. And there are lots and lots of different issues relating to AI, copyright issues. And to be clear, we're only talking about generative AI. If we're talking about non-generative AI, we're in a different discussion entirely. So with regard to generative AI, I mentioned the ingestion issue. There's copyrightability issues. There's liability issues. There's transparency. There's a host of issues here that, you know, we're all going to have to figure out. And as you mentioned at the outset, you know, we might need to just take things a little bit slower, because things are moving pretty darn fast right now.
Yeah. I think Universal Music said they would not permit scraping. Keith, what's your interpretation? What is scraping?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways that AI can gather its data sets, if you will, right? One way is to scrape off the internet. Mm-hmm. And a few weeks ago, the Washington Post actually had an article about this that talked about how the fact that, I can't remember which data set it was now, but was scraping like of the top 100 sites, like, you know, half of them were pirate websites, which is a problem, right? Mm-hmm. So you have that problem, the fact that what they're scraping may not be legitimate at the outset, but you also have the problem is even when they're scraping or copying or ingesting legitimate works, books and photographs and things like that. They're not getting permission from the copyright owners to do that, and they're certainly not compensating. And I'm saying that very broadly. Obviously, there are certain AI companies like an IBM and an Adobe that are doing that, okay? Mm-hmm. But there's a bunch, that are not. OpenAI is a good example of that, although there was a recent announcement just the other day from OpenAI says they're going to start changing their policies in that regard. So we'll see where that leads us, I guess.
Yeah, it seems like, there are bigger questions here, not just, the simple question of can an AI algorithm or a company that owns an AI algorithm own a copyright, create something that can be owned? I think the current courts are saying they cannot.
Yeah, I mean, also a very interesting question, because that one little question you ask is actually right. a bunch of
little questions.
So you ask, can the AI company own the output, if you will? Certainly, they own the algorithm, right? The algorithm is software that is potentially protected by patents, trade secrets, copyrights, et cetera. So. But we're talking about the output. First of all, the question is it the AI company that owns it, or right. if there's something to own, of course, or is it the person who put in the prompts, right?
Right.
That would be one question. Another question, and the tougher question, honestly, is that protected by copyright? And we really, honestly, we have think of this in a spectrum. On the one end, you have human creation, fully 100% human creation. Doesn't involve AI at all, old-fashioned creation, we'll call it, right? Traditional creation. That's clearly protected by copyright. On the other end of the spectrum, you have AI creation, something totally created by AI. You maybe just say, hey, AI, I need a picture of a frog, and they give you a picture of a frog, right? There's no creativity there. That's going to be produced by AI. And I don't think there's any question that with the result of that, the output is not going to be protected. The tougher question, the much tougher question is everything in between that, right? Where you have human-assisted AI-generated output, mm-hmm. or you have AI-assisted human creativity, right? And where do you draw that line? The Copyright Office recently put out some guidance that attempted to do that. It's a good first attempt, but it has created a lot of confusion amongst those in the copyright community. And frankly, we're just not sure at this point whether their guidance is the correct guidance either. And that's something that we're talking about internally and looking into. So the copyrightability of the output, who owns it, whether it's ownable, if you will, whether it's protected by copyright, is something that is very much front and center right now.
Lana, as a creator and a songwriter and recording artist, you have multiple copyrights. We all do, but you have, formal filed rights, I'm sure. Have you been able to rely on them for revenue? I mean, is that part of your mix as an artist? How do you see that?
Well, I always say, how do you make money in the music business? By not making money in the music business. And, the answer is sometimes. Sometimes the music hits, sometimes it doesn't, but I can't rely on that. So, I make money from a lot of different things, and I really want to disrobe that actually, because I think a lot of artists getting in to music think that they're going to be generating enough income to live off of or have a sustainable career based off of just streaming. But really, I make money from a lot of different things, like writing for other people, concerts, merch, directing shows, content creation, working with brands, coaching. And right now I'm creating a course for a college. So these are a lot of different skills I've had to learn along the way just to make ends meet and have a sustainable career.
For your biggest hit song, or the song that has been most popular, what would you get paid, say, from the streaming services? What do you see as the check, quarterly or whatever?
I don't know that I necessarily want to give a number for people.
It could be pennies.
Private. It could be. No, but it's right. You make 0.00001
right.
cents, right? You're not making anything. And the amount of money that you put in to market it, just, you're going to break even if you're lucky. So I think that's really important, and you need a marketing budget. You can't get anywhere, especially if you're a new artist, because there's the market's so diluted. And I think that's just bringing it back to AI. That's what we're seeing, right? A lot of copycats and that are diluting the market. But there will always be a place for talent and realness and raw, real human emotion, which is the one thing that AI cannot provide yet.
Mm-hmm. David Lowry, who's the lead singer of Cracker, the band Cracker, they have about 20 albums out over 30 years. He said that he received $17 from, I believe it was $17 from, I wrote about this on my blog, from Spotify for 1 million streams of one of his songs.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So, you know, 1 million is not enough. You need like 50 million or hundreds of millions of streams, and then maybe you can make something. Yeah, it's a challenge for artists, but AI, we don't know how it's going to impact that. I mean, it could be a positive in terms of compensation, and you know, maybe not. Keith, do you see this as a big? Your background is as a patent examiner.
Yes, yes.
So you have that unique capability of understanding various rights very deeply. Do you see a general devaluation of IP rights? It just seems like the patents and inventors are having similar challenges. It's very hard to license in tech now. They don't have to. They, you know, they call it efficient infringement. And basically, so sue me and it'll be, you know, 5 years and $10 million and you probably still won't win as a plaintiff. So it's a very unkind environment for creators, it seems like.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately. It has been this way for a while. It's you know, when everything turned digital, it became so easy to distribute and disseminate, whether it's music or books or photographs or something, you know, amongst your friends and family and colleagues. That I think that is sort of what started it. And you talk about IP more generally. I think copyright was sort of the canary in the coal mine or whatever. And then patents followed, it seems like. And I think with patents, not to get too far down this road, I think it was really COVID and, you know, and the WTO exception, and people's also kind of just ignored the fact that all the research and innovation that goes into creating medicines and other things, they discount that and they just look at what they have in their hand and what's available. And the same is true, going back to copyright, to creative works. People like Lana and other creators, you know, spend their whole lives learning their craft and learning how to do it damn well. And the idea that somehow that AI can do the same thing is preposterous is the word that comes to mind. It's just not the same. It's nothing near, and I don't think it ever will be. And but there's a threat because people think that it could be, and it's not. And you know, what goes into the making of a song or the taking of a classic photograph or a poem or a great book. I mean, that, you know, is nothing that AI is going to be able to repeat. And I think people need to understand that. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people don't. They see this really shiny new toy that's right, available to them, and they're all like, "Oh, look at this! Look what I did with this!" Without thinking about the repercussions or the impact that it might have on other groups and other individuals, I think.
There's so much more creation today, innovation on the invention side and content creation on the copyright side, that it's like people are throwing their hands up and saying, well, we can't track it anyway, which is not true. It can be tracked and people can be paid. You know, I'm told that the algorithms exist to track, minute transactions, whether it be through blockchain or something. But, you know, artists and inventors could be paid if the powers that be wanted to pay them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've heard these arguments before. These are not new arguments. A new technology comes along. You go, well, how would we even do that? How would we get that? And businness models change, technologies change. there may be more collective licensing in the future, perhaps. Maybe that's one thing that happens. We'll just have to see. But to simply throw up your hands and go, well, we're not going to pay these people because either A, we don't want to, or we don't think we should have to, it's too difficult. You know, strike one, strike two, strike three. I mean, none of those are good arguments.
Lana, you, in addition to performing and acting, you also teach and coach. And on your website, I found quite interesting. You said one of your taglines is "Run your artistry like an LLC." What does that mean? And what are you telling people in your coaching about IP or, you know, generative AI?
Well, being an artist is about so much more than making music. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, I didn't really understand that. I thought that, oh, I can just get really good at this one thing, right? Keith, you put it so well. There will always be a place for talent. There will always be a place and an audience for mastery. I think that's very important. But alongside that, it's called the music business, right? Not the music. It's the music business. These two pieces have to work in tandem for something to be successful. And in the beginning, I didn't know I'd be making a way for myself and forging a path also for others to figure it out. And there's no rule book. And I think that's a big problem, actually, because there can be a step-by-step process of how to just smooth out some of those bumps. There's a lot of questions and not a lot of answers because everyone makes it so differently. But my goal with Run Your Artistry Like an LLC is to just send the elevator back down. And right now I'm developing a pop star program for pre-professionals in high school and for a college. And I negotiated with that college that the students would own their copyright.
Oh, interesting.
And they did not fight it. They didn't fight it at all. They said, okay, fine, whatever you want. And that's really the first time I'm seeing that happen. It's very exciting for me because we're teaching kids through doing. And now an 18-year-old will own their work right away. That's amazing to me. And I just want kids and anyone getting into this to have more informed decisions earlier on in their career.
What are some of the other two or three basic rules that you tell artists, young artists who want to establish themselves? What should they be thinking about?
Own your work. Keep creating, no matter how many times you fall down and no matter how many rocks get thrown at you. And don't quit before the miracle.
Mm-hmm.
It will happen. And there will always be a place for truth and raw, real emotion. So really, I say this because I haven't heard it said before, and I think it's very key. Every single time I get on mic, I bring forth an amalgamation of every life experience I've ever had. No one can take that. Not AI, not an investor or a label. They don't own a percentage of who I am. And a lot of times the line gets blurred because your art is you.
Mm-hmm.
Your brand is you. My brand is my stories, my life story. And I'm just expressing it through this medium. So to me, that is invaluable. And I think AI is posing a lot of questions. What is the value of art? And to me, my art is me. So it's bringing up a lot of self-worth questions and issues within myself, but I keep going back to the root. The root is the vibrational output of my pain, my joy, my emotion, every experience I've had. And there will always be a place for that and an audience for that. So I'm not afraid of it. But I do think that we have to learn to coexist with it and use it to our benefit.
Mm-hmm. You have 40,000 Instagram followers, which sound like a lot, and they are a lot. And what has that meant to you as an artist, as a creator?
Well, I did The Voice recently, mm-hmm. which was a huge help. But I had already established myself online prior to that. show. And it really just enhanced what I already had going on. But I think very deeply about the content I create. And I actually create everything 3 months in advance minimum. And that's something that I do every single time I put something out into the world. And for me, it's not about age or gender or catering to a percentage or demographic of people. It's more about what about me resonates with other people and how can I connect with them on a deeper level through social media? And I think that same question needs to be asked with AI, because it's really the same thing. It's, you know, using a machine to generate some sort of outcome, right? So it's just how honest can I be on camera, on mic, in my work? And those are the questions I ask.
You know, part of it is that AI is so authoritative sounding, even when it's wrong or the data is flawed that it's using or it's stolen.
Very human-like.
Yeah, and that sort of sucks people in and makes you feel that, well, whatever it says is going to be accurate because it sounds accurate and it's a machine after all. Keith, recently, I think in the recent year or maybe two, copyrights became subject to a small claims court. Took a long time. I think you were involved in the creation of the small claims court. How has that gone?
So, yes, the small claims court officially launched in June, I think it was June 16th of 2022. Okay. So we're getting close to its year anniversary. Mm-hmm. There have been two decisions, and I think as of right now, there's about 40 cases that are pending, although out of about 400 that have been filed. So a lot of them have been dismissed for one reason or another, like, you know, because people are using this small claims court and not using attorneys to file, right? The idea is that you don't need an attorney. You can file your own cases. And there's a learning process that must go on. And so some of these creators who are filing cases realize that either they don't have a case or they didn't do it correctly or something of that nature. But anyway, I would say so far it's working quite well, but obviously we'll have to see as more and more decisions start coming out of the court. Many cases that have been dismissed already, people might go, oh, that's not a good thing. It is actually a good thing, right? It's just when your case gets dismissed, you're learning why it was dismissed, about copyright in the process, right? And so maybe a creator who filed a case and the case was dismissed, they realized that, oh, I didn't have a case there to begin with, right? So they learned something about copyright. Or maybe they realized, oh, wait a minute, I can't sue. This happens a lot, unfortunately. I can't sue a foreign resident. I can only sue U.S. residents in the small claims court. And they learn some technical aspect of the small claims court. And then in a lot of these cases that are dismissed, we believe they're actually resulting in settlements. And we just don't know, right? There's no requirement that they report settlements. And we think the parties are getting together and settle, which is our ultimate goal here.
And what's the maximum you can get on or an artist or creator can receive?
Yeah, the maximum for one claim would be $30,000. Mm-hmm. Not for one claim. Total is $30,000. For one claim is $15,000. Okay. And no one's gotten even close to that at this juncture, which is not that big a surprise. There's also what they call a smaller claims process, where you have only one officer presiding as opposed to three, and that the maximum you could get would be $5,000. And a lot of people are taking advantage of that. The procedures are a lot simpler. The cases move a lot quicker, things like that. So it's this great opportunity, and people are slowly kind of finding out about it, creators, and seeing if they have a case and bringing the case where they think it's appropriate.
It's a small, small claims court, I guess. The interests of performers and independent content creators like Lana and those recording labels and film studios like Disney, they differ. Keith, you see this every day, I'm sure. How does the Copyright Alliance address the needs of both? Because while they're both pro-copyright and pro-rights, the agenda is pretty different, you know, if you're Disney or if you're a struggling artist.
Yeah. I mean, look, we do occasionally see conflicting views within the Copyright Alliance on copyright issues. Remember, we only deal with copyright issues. There may be other issues take place, like we are not involved in what's going on with the Writers Guild strike or anything like that. We're not involved in anything there. But what we try to do is let the arguing, to the extent there's argument and disagreement, that's internal. We keep that inside the family, so to speak, right? And we see if we can find a way forward, right? An agreement, whether it's at a high level or maybe more detailed level. And when we can bring all of our members to the table and get some level of agreement kind of moving forward on policy issues. Let the arguments and the disagreements happen between the copyright community as a whole and those, as you mentioned earlier, that aren't really supportive of copyright necessarily, right? The platforms out there that are constantly, you know, denigrating intellectual property and copyright and others. We have a big enough battle with them and other groups. And, you know, you mentioned how much, for instance, Lana and others get paid in streaming. The amount is just absolutely criminal. So let's all work together to improve that, for instance, as an example. And, you know, that might mean that everyone isn't getting everything that they want. But maybe if you're getting 80% of what you want, that's good enough.
Right.
Try to bring
right.
everyone to the table under kind of that credo, if you will.
It's gotten better. And, you know, you probably know about this. This was a few years ago when Taylor Swift went to her new label, I guess it was Universal. And part of her negotiation was to make sure other artists in the label had access to the equity that Universal owned in Spotify. Because that's really where the money, I mean, Spotify is valued at $25 billion or more now.
Yeah, I won't get into the details of that, but an example of what she did, I mean, we deal with a lot of creators who are up there testifying in Capitol Hill, or like Lana here, who were, you know, talking sort of as role models for other creators to help them to pass along what they can about their experiences and what works and what doesn't work. And we work with so many creators that are like that are happy to help the copyright community as a whole. Obviously, there are some creators that are in better positions to do that than others. Those are more experienced, and Taylor Swift certainly fits into that category, probably more so than just about anybody. But
right.
We absolutely love when there are other creators out there looking out for you know, the struggling artist or the new artist or the, you know, to try to help them a little bit. And that's fantastic when it happens. And like I said, we rely on that. We work with a lot of creators that's their mindset. They're trying to, you know, authors trying to help other authors and photographers trying to help other photographers, you know, that kind of learn the ropes and things like that. And we also have sort of what I'll call cross-pollination, right? And, you know, we have legislation that might be out there that, you know, in the States or something that is going to hurt authors, book authors, right? And we'll get musicians and composers and photographers who go, this isn't fair. And they're doing it, you know, to authors, book authors first, but we're next. So we'll jump in and be supportive of one another. And that's fantastic. And that honestly is a lot about what the Copyright Alliance itself is all about, is pulling the copyright community together and having us all row in the same direction, you know, and pushing for good policies that respect creators.
We just have a few more minutes. Lana, what advice do you have for recording artists, songwriters today who want to compete? What do you recommend people be thinking about?
Ask as many questions as you can. Get involved. Fight for what you know is yours and right.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one will do that for you. Knowledge is power. So just learn. Right now, we're in a really cool time because you can be your own label, right? You can run your artistry. It has to be run like a business, period. Learn those aspects and protect yourself. That is actually how you protect yourself. And conversations like this are so important. The fact that I'm not a policymaker. My understanding of that is very general, although I have gone pretty deep now that I've started to be introduced to USIPA and copyright law, because it directly affected me. I'd be in a much different position had I known at the beginning of my career not to sign a work for hire when I probably shouldn't have, right? And so all these these things you learn over time by failing. And so I wish that I would have had a mentor. I wish that I would have asked more questions up front. If you don't understand something, don't sign it. I would say that. And just you have to be okay with failing, and you have to be okay with things not turning out the way that you thought they would, but they always work out for the best. So if you think you're going to make a lot of money on one song because it's your first song you've ever put out, you put all your heart and soul, all your money into it, it might not. And I would just say, know that going in, but the next one will be even better. And the next one will be better. And over time, you will build and understand the landscape. Find a mentor.
Those are expensive lessons. Keith, any final thoughts about AI and where we're going today, or what we should be thinking about, what creators should be thinking about?
Yeah, I think just every creator out there should read the news, make sure they keep up to speed on what's going on in AI, and do what they can to protect themselves, right? Right now, we don't exactly know what that is, because these AI companies are just running roughshod over all these individual creators that are out there by copying their stuff without asking. To have an AI license, right, or for that matter, any license, to be able to license your work, I think. But just try to stay attuned to what's going on and how your rights might be implicated. And honestly, I'll do a little self-promotion here. The easiest way to do that is join the Copyright Alliance. Our membership is free. We send out a monthly newsletter that provides monthly updates. We provide other updates, like we have a copyright and AI update that we provide now whenever news and AI and copyright happens. You mentioned the small claims court. We have a small claims court update as well. If you are interested in staying up to date and knowing what your rights are, just come to the Copyright Alliance website.
It's an excellent website, I must say. A lot of good content, very well organized.
A lot of the people that we deal with are people who are professional, sort of, yeah, and they're doing this for their careers and their livelihoods, and so for when their material is stolen or not paid for or not unlicensed and used, that hurts their ability to create, to have a living, right, to pay for their kids, medical bills or going to camp or whatever, to buy a new car, whatever the case may be. That's a real issue.
Lana, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think, I've so enjoyed this conversation because we're kind of breaking the gatekeeping wall here. And I think more conversations like this need to be had. And what Copyright Alliance does so wonderfully is really include the artist. And what we're doing here, Bruce, with you getting both of us together, we are from completely different walks of life, but we still need to be brought to the table. And I think if we can do that, and right now we're all in separate huddles, and if we can just sit at the same table and break bread, I think this would solve a lot of what's going on right now. And just keep going back to why we do music in the first place.
Well, thank you both very much. This has been a really enlightening discussion, and I'm sure it'll be the first of many that will take place. Understanding IP Matters is brought to you by the Center for Intellectual Property Understanding, an independent nonprofit, and its supporters. Listen to episodes at understandingip.org. Follow SIPU on LinkedIn and Twitter. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Contact us at explore@understandingip.org. This episode was produced and edited by Nonsensible Productions. Content conveyed is for informational purposes only and does not reflect the views of SIPU or its affiliates.